shiba shiba.
Let me in.
Shiba shiba.
I wanna be closer to you.
Shiba shiba.
Open up your soul.
Shiba shiba.
Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show will try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Something that you've been able to enjoy for decades is happening again. The San Francisco Mime Troupe has been around for as far back as I can remember. And I would like to welcome from the San Francisco Mime Troupe the fabulous Michael Gene Sullivan. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, you know, all things considering, as
yeah,
you all know.
Yeah, all things considering.
All things considering. How are you doing?
Well, it's been an interesting year so far.
Yeah.
And it just keeps getting it more interesting.
We are living in interesting times. When I was a kid, I didn't
understand. Yeah, that curse is definitely coming true.
I didn't understand as a child that "May you live in interesting times" was actually a deep curse. But now I
it's a deep curse.
Now I get it.
Oh man, I want to have interesting times. Nah, you want things to be kind of boring and predictable. Actually,
exactly. Yeah. Well, one thing that's not boring is the San Francisco Mime Troupe. For people who may be new listeners, tell them about it.
Well, first off, the Mime Troupe doesn't do silent mime. We do political musical comedy. I tell people that seeing a Mime Troupe show is just like seeing a Broadway show, only it's really small and it has a point. Our shows are free to see, most of them. We do have a few shows that cost that are indoors, but most of our shows are free in the parks. We're a 66-year-old company. We have a Tony Award, we have Obie Awards, we tour around the world when we can, but as that's become harder and harder for us, like, you know, so many theater companies that have died, we've managed to hold on and feel like it's super important that our analysis of a working-class theater company telling a working-class analysis of all the crap we're going through, whether it's under this particular regime or the previous ones. There's always some criticism that the corporate media misses and that we put together, make into not just a political comedy, but a political comedic analysis of what's going on, so that it's the working class talking to the working class, using comedy and music for some hard truths.
So the title of the show that you're doing right now, it's one of those words that tech bros like to throw around a lot. It's disruption. And my take on the word disrupt, like, they're always like, "We're disruptors." And it's like, no, a hurricane is a disruption. And then, you know what I mean? Things that are disruptions are not positive things in the way you think it is. It's like it takes forever to get things back on track. So with that in mind, talk about how you chose that name and what the show is about this year.
Yeah, well, the thing, yeah, like you said, disruption for me normally means anti-union. You know, when somebody says, "We're going to disrupt the industry." No, they use that term, it's a catchphrase term to raise money from investors who don't understand the technology that's going on right now. They're like, "Oh, we're going to disrupt everybody with a phone." No, you're just going to make a cheaper phone, probably by not paying the workers enough. You're not disrupting a damn thing.
Right.
But what we've allowed by having this, all of these people put that word in, and what they, you know, it's not innovation. It's just messing things up so a few people can get richer.
Right.
It's not evolution or improving. It's just the corporatization of our daily lives. You know, government gets disrupted by being privatized.
Right.
You know, people say, "We're going to run things different." But corporations are run for profit, whereas government is essentially and always a not-for-profit entity.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say they're going to disrupt government, what they really mean is they're going to make some people rich and stop doing the thing that government does, which is provide services for the citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so disruption, the play, is about how all of our lives are being disrupted in so many different ways, not just with the corporatization of government, but also with people's daily lives, the things that we took for granted, like some kind of rule of law, or the Constitution being respected, or having three different parts of government.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that are getting disrupted now. Having people snatched up off the street by literally secret police who are masked and snatched up off the street and taken away. That is a disruption of our civil rights. That is a disruption of all the things that we took for granted in this country, and still to a large extent take for granted. The things that we took for granted in the last election were like, well, it's going to be two sides of the same coin, lesser of two evils. You didn't think the Constitution was what we were voting on.
Right.
You know? You didn't think it was going to be, oh, it's the rule of law. It's the loss of courts. It's not just the loss of this law or that law. It's the loss of all of them. That was what the last election was really about, and not enough people got that. And so now they're seeing how everything is disrupted. Every time you see your friend, who may be, you know, an upstanding, respectable member of the society, but because they weren't born here, every time you see them might be the last time you see them.
Right. Right, they're currently working on what do they call it? Stripping people who have been naturalized of their citizenship.
Yes, and also getting overturning the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which says that if you are born in this country and if you are subject to the laws of the United States, you are a citizen of the United States. That's it. It's not really up for interpretation. But now they're just reinterpreting that and saying, yeah, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Not if your parents weren't from here. And it's like, that didn't apply to all of those other people. This law is very clear. And by changing the Constitution and misinterpreting it, by disrupting the Constitution is the only thing that makes a country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the culture. It's not the elections. It is the fundamental and foundational laws and agreements of the social contract of that country. That is what is being disrupted right now on an essential level in everything in our lives. And I just had to make a comedy about that.
Because you got to laugh.
That's the thing. It's like, our collective member, Valina Brown, she's always says, you know, comedy has to be it's the delivery system for you know, the tough things we got to say. And so, and we use songs and we have dance and, you know, all of the stuff that's going on to try to a large extent, I feel like theater in general, theater is the town square that the working class can come and talk to itself. You can't do that in movies. You can't do it in television. But theater, all you need for a theater is a couple of people acting and a couple of people watching.
Mm-hmm.
It is the one way we can do this. And also, it serves a purpose of reminding people that they're not crazy. In the society, the way we have things set up now, people could feel so isolated. They can go, wait, this doesn't make any sense, but they can feel alone with that. But and even if they go online and they go, there are other individuals saying things, but they themselves are sitting in a room by themselves looking at YouTube or looking at Instagram and stuff. But when you go to a play, you look around at an audience who agrees with you. It doesn't mean they agree with you at every point. It doesn't mean that they voted for exactly who you did. But they all see a problem in the society, and they're looking to this play to help to see a different analysis, to understand things better. Sure, have a good time, get together with your friends, have a picnic in the park, in the case of the Mime Troupe, but really to build a community of resistance.
All right, well, with that in mind... the show Disruption, give us the elevator pitch of the show.
Oof, the elevator pitch of a show like Disruption. Well, it is.
It's a tall building, so you got time.
Yeah, really. Everything in our democracy is being disrupted right now for the benefit of a very few people. And what we keep hearing from are those people. We know more about Elon Musk. We know more about Jeff Bezos and his marriage in Venice. We know more about the Trump kids and their constant grifts. But hearing about what's going on for people on the street, hearing about not just ourselves, but others, about each one of these folks, that there is no villainization in this show of fellow working class people. There are people who absolutely think, you know, we should have America where we have more jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened to our industrial base? Where did that go? Didn't this country's not doing as well as it did before? They don't know why, but they want it to do better. That's understandable. They've been lied to. And we need to make sure that our audience and ourselves, we know who the enemies are. The enemies are not who is on your level.
Right.
You shouldn't be looking sideways to who's messing up your life. Shouldn't be looking to the immigrants and the gays and the trans folks and people of color. And you should be looking up. It's the people upstairs who are setting us against each other. And the people upstairs who are privatizing our government for their own benefit. It is the people upstairs who think that the corporate mindset is the only mindset and that empathy is weak and taking care of people is weak. But we have not accepted it, but we've allowed that thought to flourish. And they are disrupting not just our government and not just our economy, but our humanity. Musical comedy!
So give me an outline of the plot.
Oh, well, it's basically three stories.
Okay.
There's the story of Augie, who is a Philippine-American. He's born in the Philippines, and he moved to the United States, been here his whole life, and he works in a coffee shop downtown called Fried Kings. Fried Kings is a little coffee shop that keeps changing depending on what's popular at the time with rich people, basically.
Okay.
It's near Civic Center, so all of these Civic Center people who live in Hillsboro, but they work for our current mayor, and the corporatization, they all go to this place, and the owner's trying to keep it going by always, you know, feeding whatever new thing they want, whatever quinoa, avocado, whatever.
And so
Augie is there. He works there. His boss is an immigrant. Also, his best friend, who has a series of nicknames, she's always named after a different revolutionary in the show.
Okay.
She's a protester. She's out there actively protesting. But they have this ongoing argument, which is it better in a society when you see a problem to solve the problem, to Band-Aid over, to fix the crack, to plaster over this, or let things get a little worse so that people understand the problems?
Mm.
You know, do you see the, so this guy, what he does is, you know, Meals on Wheels loses money. He uses his own money, buys people food. Somebody else doesn't have Medicare stuff. He helps them fill out the forms, even though the forms are getting more and more chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
He's the person who's always there to help when something goes wrong, but his friend is like, that might be part of the problem. So that's one story. Mm-hmm. Another story is of a cop from New Jersey, who, you know, his whole town used to be Democratic until NAFTA, and then everybody turned against the Democrats because they blamed Clinton for the factory closing down. And so he ends up becoming a cop in San Francisco, and really thinking that San Francisco and California is just full of fake people. Everything's fake out here. They don't make anything real. The people aren't real. They don't stand for anything. All they make is movies and trouble. And so his struggle is he had to leave New Jersey, couldn't be a cop back there because he's gay. And he knew that that was going to be a problem back there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell his family. He came to San Francisco to become a cop. So he's a gay cop in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
black gay cop in San Francisco. But he's still enforcing the laws of as fascism gets worse and worse, working with ICE, doing all this stuff, just doing his job. Doesn't trust the liberals because he sees they crushed his life back east, but now he's working for people who he knows don't like him, knows that ultimately he'll be the problem for them. So he's trapped in the middle.
Right.
And then the third story is a character, Zubari McIntosh, who is a Silicon Valley star who's been brought in by the mayor to basically turn the city around, do all of the cuts, to corporatize it, to make it about profit, to sell things, to rename things. It's no longer at Market Street. It's Amazon Market Street. It's Alka-Seltzer Trust. It's the Golden Arches Gate Bridge. All the branding that she could do to just make money for the city, because that's all it's about. And her struggle of having to work with democracy and what the people want versus maximizing profit for the city.
Mm.
So those are the three stories.
Yeah, and they're comedies.
Oh, and it's a comedy. Yeah, comedy, music. So this show has some more serious moments. When I was writing it, as I was going along, I was like, I need to have people kind of get used to Montrip shows being very broad, very big comedies, which is great. But I wanted to make this show a little more human, mm-hmm. so it goes from big comedy to more human interactions that are subtler.
Okay.
You know, it's like we did that. I did that with Red Carol also. Even last year's show, to try to show things where it's like, no, this is a way to show the characters that the audience definitely can feel like that is them.
Okay.
We use the big style to draw people in. We use the big style to show the hypocrisy of capitalism and mm-hmm. how it fundamentally is antithetical to a democratic republic. But sometimes we want to show things a little more on a human scale. So this show goes back and forth.
Okay. So for our listening audience who is intrigued and now wants to see this show, when and where?
All over the place. Because we open on the 4th of July in Dolores Park, and then after that, we will be doing shows in the East Bay, North Bay, Santa Cruz, all over the Bay Area. So you can go to our website, which is SFMT, that's San Francisco Montrup, .org, and hit schedule, and it'll show you all the places we're going to be, when we're going to be indoors, when we're going to be outdoors. Like I said, most of the shows are free. We do ask for a donation after the show, but because we're a professional theater company, that's one of the things that even our most fervent fans forget, that we get paid to do this. This is a job. We're not volunteers. And so that means we have a budget. It's free to see, but not free to do. And
right.
since we don't take corporate sponsorships, because how can you critique capitalism if you're taking the capitalist dough?
Right.
And we're not getting money from the NEA right now, because anything
is.
You do for the NEA now has to be patriotic, and the White House decides what that is.
So
that's why we ask for money afterwards. We've got, you know, a few foundations and family funds that give us money. But our summer this year is half as long as it normally would have been, specifically because we couldn't afford to do any more.
I understand.
Our truck broke last year, so we're in the process of buying a new truck, raising money so we can do Red Carol again this Christmas. And at the same time, we need to make sure that the artists that we employ, and we're an artist-run company, but we make sure that the artists can afford to live in the Bay Area. We can't ask them to do jobs for free.
Right.
So it's a lot. It does take hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we're fortunate that we raised enough in the first part of this year so we could do at least half of our summer.
Well, if people...
we'll see what happens in the future.
So if people want to donate online, is that a possibility?
Oh, yeah. They can just go, and same thing, go to our website and find the donate button. They can become annual donors. We have different tiers of donations, whether they want to be a comrade or a sponsor. They can make donations for very specific things on our wish list, or they can just, I'm going to give this much money per month or per year, things like that, because all of it makes a huge amount of difference.
Okay, well, Michael, we are out of time, which is unfortunate because I could talk to you forever. But just to say one more time, Disruption is happening July 4th at Dolores Park. What part of the park do you guys normally do your thing in for the listeners who haven't been there?
Oh, down at the park, 18th and Dolores. We're kind of up at where the baseball diamond used to be, and now it's more of the soccer fields.
Okay.
Like I said, we open that day, and then we will play most weekends, and we have some nighttime shows in Oakland at Lake Merritt. Just check out the website and you'll know where we are.
All right. Well, Michael Gene Sullivan, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me again, Marilyn.
Oh, Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Go check out the San Francisco Mime Troupe on July 4th. You'll have a fabulous time. You'll hang out with your friends. You'll do something wonderful. So stay with me.
Of all the evil that will have to end.
It will, oh yes, yes, yes. Don't you love the sea?
All right.
It will end.
All right.
Well, all right.
Some folks are gonna get the notion. Just to stay alive. Sing about a revolution because
by the clothing of angels, by the giveaway price of your birthright, you will never savor the fruits of your labor.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. You know how I love to have the locals on to talk about their creative process and the things that they do. We've got some authors here in the city, and you need to know about some of them. One of them is here today. I'm talking to Jeff Kalis. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about when you decided that you wanted to be, that you wanted to write and to write poetry and books and whatnot.
Well, I think I've been writing really ever since I was in Miss Bennett's third grade class, and she was allowing us to do projects, and I decided to write a play for puppets.
Ah.
That was a while ago, though.
Jeff, are you still there?
Did you hear that response?
I heard that you were in class and you wrote a play for puppets. And how did it go over?
It was innovative. It was sort of a captive audience, but I think the other third graders appreciated it.
And from there on, you were like, this is what I want to do forever?
Well, as time went on, I got into what we would have called junior high school back then, and I was the editor of the school paper, then went on to the yearbook in high school, and on into college. Then back in the 60s and 70s, we had what were called underground newspapers and publications, and I freelanced for them, and just kept that with me. I was a government employee for quite a while. I was a civil rights specialist, but while I was doing that, I did keep writing, and it eventually became clear to my supervisor that I was probably more interested in writing than I was in doing investigative reports. So he gently suggested that I might want to resign the government, which I did.
Oh, he's just like, you need to go write.
Yes, exactly.
So what was the first thing that you ever published that made you feel like a real writer?
Wow. I think, you know, that was going early on. But when I started freelancing for the San Francisco Chronicle, which was in the mid-80s, being in a public newspaper, a daily, I think that was different. So then, I mean, people would be reading me all over the city. If I were in the writing for the Pink section, which I did a lot about entertainment, particularly music, then I could wander around on weekends and see people all over the place reading what I had written. So that kind of made the whole thing, I think, realer for me.
Okay. So fast forward, would you say that you prefer to write poetry, nonfiction, fiction? What's your jam?
Much later, several decades later, I went back to San Francisco State, where I'd finished off my undergraduate degree. I came back much later and picked up a Master of Fine Arts degree in creative writing. That was where I really began getting into the poetry. And even though I got in on the basis, partly on the basis of having submitted an excerpt from a biography I'd written of Sly and the Family Stone.
Right, I want to take you higher.
That's part of how I got into that department.
Mm-hmm.
But then while working towards the degree, I began writing poetry and realized that I really loved it and that it felt different. It's writing, but a different kind of writing. It's like it's sort of having a different kind of an affair with words.
Mm-hmm,
it felt
mm-hmm.
different.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Before we talk more about your poetry, so Sly, as we all know, Sly Stone passed away just a little while ago. So
earlier this month, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you wrote, "I Want to Take You Higher: The Life and Times of Sly and the Family Stone." How did you have a relationship with Sly before you wrote the book, or did it come out of writing the book?
My relationship was like everybody's. The music that Sly and the band were coming out with in the late 60s, early 70s were really the kind of the soundtrack of my having moved out from the East Coast to California
mm-hmm.
and basically starting my life as a young adult. So I was already a fan, and I got a cold call from an agent saying, "I have a publisher who wants a biography of this man and his band. Would you be willing to do it?" I said, "Sure. I love them. I've always loved them."
And how was the process of doing the were you able to interview him, or was it interviewing other people? How did that come together?
It took a long time to get to Sly himself, but ultimately, with persistence, mm-hmm. I did. In the meantime, I began interviewing other members of the band
mm-hmm.
And getting to know them. And I think the fact that those interviews went well probably enabled me the easier to connect with Sly. In other words, the reputation got around.
Got it. All right. And so so you wrote that biography. You were going forward, and then you discover poetry. Have you published any of your poetry?
Yeah, actually, originally, my first published poems were principally in Forum, which is the literary magazine of City College.
Mm-hmm.
After I got my MFA at San Francisco State, I didn't want to stop. And so I realized, hey, City College is about a half a mile away from where you live, and you can go there for free. So I enrolled there and actually found some of the profs and a lot of the students much more engaging and aware
mm-hmm.
than the people that I'd been dealing with at San Francisco State. So I started submitting to their literary journal and just kept getting published every semester.
Nice. So what is, of the poems that you've done, do you have a favorite that you like to share with people? Or are they all like your children, you can't pick one?
My wife, Louise, isn't with me right now, but her favorite is a poem that I wrote about how we met. We actually met at a 4th of July party. I guess the anniversary of our meeting is coming up in a few days.
Aww.
We met at a party hosted by one of my ex-girlfriends up on Potrero Hill. And that's what that poem is about. It's sort of, I kind of did it with a magical realism sort of approach. I figured there needed to be a Cupid, even though it was, 4th of July and not Valentine's Day. So I had this Cupid in the poem.
Okay. Do you remember any of it that you could, will we get to hear why your wife likes it?
I wish I did. I haven't memorized
it. It's not on tap. I understand.
I think that I did memorize was a sonnet that I wrote in freshman English at Boston University, because the prof had us memorize poems, so I memorized that one. Okay. The other ones, I need to cheat by reading from a sheet of paper.
Okay. Well, then, for our listening audience who's interested in reading your works, where can they, is there an online place where they can go and see your works, or is it available through local bookstores?
I still need to get together an anthology of poetry, and I would say that the fact that I'm still doing a great deal of music journalism, it kind of competes with the poetry,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little bit sad. It's tough to do both.
Sure.
So I haven't gotten together an anthology of poetry, but if you go to YouTube and, you know, search under my name, and maybe I should spell it out. The first name is Jeff, J-E-F-F. The last name, K-A-L-I-S-S. You'll get some video of me reading at various places. And as for the music journalism, mm-hmm. there is an online publication called San Francisco Classical Voice, sfcv.org. A lot of what I write about nowadays with regard to music
mm-hmm.
goes up on that website. Despite the classical in the name, they're really open to many other kinds of music. In fact, I'm probably within the next week or two, I'm going to be doing an interview with Paul Simon.
Oh, very nice.
Who is not a classical musician, but my editor is nonetheless very happy that I'm going to be talking with this man and writing about a set of concerts he's going to be doing at Davies Hall next month.
Okay. Well, for our listening audience, because we're almost out of time, for our listening audience who is probably going to follow both of the links that you gave, if there is any other venue in which they can see or hear, read or hear your work.
As to venues, I read almost every month at Bird and Beckett in Glen Park.
I know exactly where
that Bird and Beckett has a poetry session on the first Thursday of every month with featured readers and also an open mic. So any of your people that write poetry themselves or just want to go hear what it sounds like live, I definitely would recommend coming to those sessions, and I'm often there doing some stuff.
Excellent. Well, Jeff Kalis, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
It's such a pleasure, you know, encountering you. And I have to tell people, because I don't know to what degree you've talked about this, but you have a marvelous singing voice.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But we're not here to talk about me.
I got to hear you perform. And in fact, I think you were doing some material that was a tribute to Sly and the Family Stone, and you were doing right by them. You were doing very well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And with that, I want to thank you once again for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Go follow all the links that he told you about to go read what Jeff Kalis is putting out in the world. You know what I'm putting out in the world? Providence, help the poor people.
Well, it probably didn't happen to poor people. Those could not help themselves. Well, it probably didn't happen to poor people. Those could not help themselves. They give them all the meal that they want, and they help someone else. I went off this morning by the heavy folks. Oh, and Mr. Roosevelt said he wasn't gonna help no more. Told him no. Property ain't gonna help no more. Miss Roosevelt told me there ain't gonna be no hard time no more.
It's the last Monday of the month, and you know what that means. I get to have my librarianista come on and talk about what's going on at the library. My librarianista du jour is Vicki Lamb. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. My name is Vicki Lamb, and I am the children's librarian over here at North Beach. It is a wonderful location, and brand new and renovated since 2014.
Now, I haven't been to the North Beach branch. Where is that located?
We are on 850 Columbus. So if you head straight up Columbus, we are right next to Joe DiMaggio Park.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you say it was renovated. So, but for you, 10 years, 11 years is brand new.
Yeah, 11 years, brand new. I know, we used to be a smaller building right where the park was, and our library used to be a gas station.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but now it is a gas station, but for your mind. So,
mm-hmm.
What's it like being the children's librarian in that location? Because I imagine you get a lot of foot traffic from tourists with children.
We do. We get a very good mix of families that are in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and it's amazing to have Fisherman's Wharf right there, and mm-hmm. also the park. We get a lot of leakage from the park, and they just come on in, whether it's just to check out a book or to use our restroom or just to stare at all of the fun displays that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get a wonderful amount of tourists that come in, especially during the summer. They're just checking out the area. They're trying to get all their stickers for the Explorers Map. You can get a sticker at every single library branch in the city. It's like playing a little game of Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know that some libraries have specialties. So does your library have a particular specialty? Like, you know, some of them have a larger Russian section or a larger Japanese section?
Mm-hmm. I think because we are located in Little Italy, we do have an Italian section.
Okay.
So we have books and DVDs and media and magazines all in Italian, but we also have a very big, thriving Chinese community.
Uh-huh.
We get a lot of the folks from Chinatown coming in, walking over. So we have a big Spanish, Chinese, and Italian collection.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the things that are going to be going on at your library during the month of July?
Oh, we are 1 month into our Summer Stride programming, which is our summer learning program. So we have pumped up the programs. We just had one of our biggest programs for the summer, the Little Explorers Petting Zoo. We had over 250 people come and meet the goats and the sheep and the alpacas.
there were lots of little kids petting goats and sheep?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's amazing. You had an alpaca?
Around the block, and while they were waiting, they were playing with chalk on the floor.
Wait. So you had alpacas there?
I think there was an alpaca.
Wow.
There were a lot of little rabbits and goats.
Wow. That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously that'll be popular every year. So
so you
just wrapped that one up. So what's coming up now?
We have a bunch of wonderful programs in both children's and in adults. In the adults, we are starting a writing series in July where we're going to have poetry readings every last Thursday of the month, all the way until January. My branch manager, Richard, does a walking tour of North Beach and shows you all the hidden gems. And he also goes and walks around Chinatown and shows you, he does a ghost walking tour of haunted places, shows you the best views. He even shows you places you can eat and gives out samples.
Have you been on these walks, any of the walks with him?
I have. It's been amazing. I learned a lot of things, and he gave away some of my secret locations, and I said, Richard, how could you?
what's one of your
on
favorite?
On the children's side of things, we have amazing programming. We have our Legos and STEM coming up on Thursdays. We're going to be out at the farmer's market this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Tree Frog Treks program coming up
where
kids can meet lizards and turtles and snakes.
Go on.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
They're going to come in and sit them down and have amphibians and reptiles of all sorts. The registration has been filled up, but you are able to wait list because people do tend to not show up.
Okay. I want to go back to the walking tour. What's one place that you consider a gym that you'd be willing to share with the rest of people? You don't have to give the one that you want to keep to yourself, but what's one that you're like, you know, I wish everyone knew about this?
He goes to, I think it's Washington Park, and talks about the buried treasure underneath the statues and how and why we know what's in them and what's been buried.
There's buried treasure under statues?
Mm-hmm. Apparently all over the city, they've put time capsules in that are erected and dug out, I think maybe every couple of decades or so.
Uh-huh.
And the one under Washington Square, we have pictures and newspaper articles showcasing what was dug out and what was put in for the next decade.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So there's buried treasure all over the city.
That's very cool. Have you ever seen any of this buried treasure, or do you just see it in pictures?
I've only seen it in pictures,
okay.
But I think some of the neighborhood have probably seen the little artifacts dug up.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to derail you. So go on with what all is coming up for July.
Oh, in July, so we have, I think, a program every single week, every couple of days. We have the Roving Rangers.
What's that?
Coming outside of our branch on the 16th. So I encourage everyone to come on by. We're going to be doing x-rays of flowers and putting them in the sun, so then you can get, like, the skeleton sun printed onto a print and you can take it home.
Wow. Go on.
We have a therapy dog coming in, so you can come in and meet Tilly, our beautiful golden retriever from the SPCA, and read Tilly a book.
So do children do that, or adults do that, or everybody? Who reads to Tilly?
It is a program in the children's area, so adults with their children come in and do it. We actually just had a class visit with Tilly and taught our first graders how to approach dogs that they don't know safely.
That's so important. You know, I know children who are afraid of dogs, but when you give them the tools to know how to approach them, then that fear diminishes very rapidly.
Yeah. They all got to pet the dog, learn how to ask if they're allowed to pet the dog, what the behaviors of an angry or scared dog looks like, and they all got to take home this coloring book that taught them, again, how to do those steps.
I love that. What kind of response do you get when the therapy dog comes in?
We have two therapy dogs that come in. Charlie is a mini Australian Shepherd, and he's a little bit easier for the littlers or people who are afraid of dogs because he's so small.
Mm-hmm.
But with our more active and enthusiastic patrons, they love having Tilly because she's so big and she's so loving and so ready to give all the love. And people are extremely excited, and they come running from the park just to come say hello to our therapy dog.
I love that. And when is Tilly going to be there again?
Tilly and our therapy dogs are usually here the third Friday of the month.
Okay.
But Tilly is going to be here on the 18th this month.
Oh, okay. Because Tilly's schedule got really busy and needed to bump it up.
Yeah.
I understand.
Sometimes we have to switch it up.
I do understand. What's a program that's coming up in the next few months that you're really excited to give people a heads up about?
I think if I want to highlight one thing this summer, it is our Yell program.
What's
which
that?
Which is our teen interns, youth engaged in library leadership.
Oh, okay.
So we give agency to these teenagers who've signed up to come work at the library, and they get to face three core questions. What is an issue your community is facing? What do school-age youth and their families like to do? And what do teens like to do? And they get to learn how to brainstorm and budget and plan and how to host an event. And on July 22nd, our teens are going to host their event. It still is a secret. You have to come on by and see what they've prepped.
But
everything comes from their hard work, their brains, and what they're enthusiastic about bringing to the community.
And how long has that been going on? How many years have you guys been doing YEL?
So I'm actually pretty new to SFPL, so I don't quite know how long they've been doing YEL.
But they have been doing it.
I know this year is one of the first years that they're getting paid for it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been around a while, but then now they're finally able to free up some do-re-mi for it. Okay, all right. So so you haven't seen the program in action yet, so it's going to be fun for you to see as well, right?
Yeah, I'm extremely excited to see what they're able to pull off because they have so much enthusiasm and creativity. They're doing, I know this week they're doing a board games and giant Jenga activity, and they're doing little bits in a couple weeks, which is, I think, if I'm not wrong, programmable coding pieces that people can snap together.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of the baseline now? Like every kid now knows how to code?
I think so. I think that's what they really want to start gearing towards.
Okay.
There's so many different types of coding programs, like coding with Legos, little bits to get kids just started. Understanding that world, because that's the world they're going to live in in the future.
That's the new world. Are there any ongoing programs that you want to make sure that everybody knows about?
I think that I encourage everyone to come to our Legos in STEM. It's really stimulating for kids to come and do a STEM project while being adjacent to, if they just want to build Legos, they can build Legos.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our routine program that happens every single month, every first and third Thursday. And we also have our open house coming up.
When is that?
We have our open house on September 27th.
Okay.
And it's just going to be a giant party at the library. We have the ballet coming, and I think we're going to have the SF Opera coming.
Wow.
And we're going to have some nature centers donated to us by the Roving Rangers. So people are going to really get tactile with wood and sticks and stones and oyster shells.
Wow, that sounds amazing. How were you able to score the ballet?
Jillian, our teen librarian, actually knows someone from the ballet. So she called on over, and they are more than happy to come.
See, now, this is why I like community, because, you know, if you were to just rely on what you see on TV, these types of things don't happen. But here you have a youngin' who knows somebody, just ask, and they were like, yeah, we'd love to do it. I love that. That makes me so happy. We are just about out of time, so is there one more program you'd like to tell us about?
We do have our Ruth Asawa-inspired craft all month long, so people can come in and make tissue paper flowers. And we will also have a Ruth Asawa-inspired activity towards the end of the month, I think on the 26th, if I'm not wrong.
Okay. And do they need to register for those in advance, or can they just show up?
Mm-mm, they can just drop on by.
Excellent. So if people want to find out more about what's going on at your branch of the library, how do they go about doing that?
They can just go to the SFPL website, and under events, you can click a filter and click North Beach Branch, and you can see everything that's going on up until, I think, September.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Vicki Lamb,
they're also welcome to come into the branch.
And give that address again.
850 Columbus.
Okay. Vicki Lamb, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and I hope you have an amazing 4th of July.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on your show. I hope you have a wonderful July 4th weekend.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, people of Earth, the library is fabulous and fantastic, and you should be spending all of your time there. And if you can't spend all of your time there, spend some of your time there. But the world is big and beautiful, and there's so many things to do and to touch your mind. So if you're not having your mind touched, that's a choice you're making, because there's a whole world out there. People of Earth, I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to go to Mongolia. So you won't hear from me in real life until the end of the month, but you'll still be able to hear the show. I'm turning the mic over to Mr. Ford. It'll be pleasuring your ear hole until the end of the month, my friends. Ta-ta and toodly-doo.